Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on Monday, June 5th, 2023. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on WMATA.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people who are joining through phone calls. You can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everyone who has joined through the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon. It also says mute, unmute, and that will do the trick. If you'd like to make some comments, you can also virtually raise or lower hands by going under reactions and clicking on the hand raise icon. If you're able to use these tools, it will be helpful. Because then we know that somebody's trying to make comments and we can have one speaker at a time. Everyone would be at mute right now, and I would request for everyone to please stay on mute unless speaking, because that helps us eliminate any external noise. So in advance, I'll thank you for that, staying on mute unless speaking. Just a reminder, we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. When a speaker is making comments, I would request for you to please state your name, then your comment. It helps the interpreters in doing their job well. It also helps people on the phone call knowing who the speaker is at the time, and when people listen to the meeting audio, it also helps them knowing who the speaker is at the time. Anybody who's looking to make public comments, please, either you can send a chat message, or when we begin public comments, you can raise your hands and we will take any public comments in the order received. We do have a wonderful team today to present, so I would just remind the presenters to please describe your slide deck in detail for the convenience of our members and members of the public who are blind or have low vision. Going back to the public comments, if we have any members of the public who are looking to make public comments, you will have 3 minutes. And we practice this to make sure that anybody who would like to make comments gets the opportunity. If we have any remaining time, and if there are any additional people who would like to make comments, we will come back to you and take your additional comments. Chair Sheehan, I can take the roll call followed by reading the agenda out loud.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. When I call out the names of the AAC members, please confirm your presence. Azhar Atura, Darnese Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. I thought I saw Vanessa on the meeting.
Alert. Audio now unmuted. Alert. Antoine John.
And Vanessa Alert. Is present.
Thank you, Vanessa. Rico Dancy.
Present.
Thank you. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher. Marcy Goldstein. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin. Steve Caffin had informed that he might be unable to join the meeting today. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray.
Here.
Thank you. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semaphore.
Here.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonow.
Here.
Thank you. Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes our roster for today's meeting. At this point, I would go ahead and read the agenda out loud. Before I do that, I would like to share my screen.
Anu?
Yes?
Anu, it's very hard to hear you. I almost can't.
Is anyone else also having difficulty hearing me?
No, I can hear you fine.
No, no problem.
I can hear you fine.
Doris, I would try to speak louder. Okay.
Well, I don't know whether you're speaking in the mic, which is, it sounds like you're not speaking close to the mic, and I'm mentioning this because I am a person with a significant hearing, and usually I can hear you quite well.
Okay, let's see what we can do. Thank you for letting me know. All right, bear with me for a quick moment, please.
Anu, I can hear others. It's just not you.
It's just not me.
I don't know whether you're in a room someplace or whatever it is, but you're not. Okay. This is not a hybrid meeting, right? This is all virtual.
It's all virtual, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. I would read the agenda. We began the meeting at 5:30. And at 5:35, we had the approval of agenda, prior meeting minutes, and board report by Patrick Sheehan, chair of the AAC meeting. 5:40, we have a fantastic team today to talk about June 2023 fares and service changes. I would skip for reading the names at this point because I think everybody had the, actually I would read. We have Nick Perfili, Heather Ferguson, Tamara Davis, McPherson, Hughes Cromwick, Mr. Blake, Tracy Foster, Jim Bargiano, and Marcus Marco. So the entire team will be discussing and sharing information about June 2023 fares and service changes. At 6:45, we will have any public comments. 7:00, we will have the bus and rail subcommittee report. At 7:15, we will have the Metro Access subcommittee report, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 7:30. Chair Sheehan, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward, and if you have any amendments or proposed amendments for the meeting, please go ahead.
As you've read the agenda, Anu, I think that the agenda is accurate. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Yes. Okay, very good. Thank you. Do I have a motion to accept the agenda as read? Thank you, Marcy.
Second.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? And okay. Any dissensions? Very good. Agenda is approved. If we get through our reports quickly, I'm sure we've got other things that we can talk about also. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes as written?
Yes.
So right. Moved.
Alert. Audio is there any, muted.
Thank you. Is there any discussion for the minutes? All right, hearing none, I will accept the minutes as written. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any aye. Opposition or any abstentions? Thank you. And board report. We always sometimes can adjust the board report based on a few things that we do. Do I have a motion to accept the board report as written?
So moved.
Okay. A second?
Second.
Very good. Multiple seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor of accepting the board report as written, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? And no abstentions. The board report is accepted as written. As Anu said, we have a good contingent of people from bus, rail, metro access, and a SNAP to talk to us about upcoming fare changes for the upcoming year based on, you know, what has been passed. And so we've heard the names, and I'll take our bus representatives first to tell us about the service changes that we have. I think that I'm not quite sure how we want to do this. Maybe it might be good for us to split this into segments. And after each segment, if we have questions about bus, we'll take that first. And then as we move on to the different segments, we'll break for questions at the end of that.
This is Anil, if I may. We do have Marcus Marco. They do have a combined slide deck. And if you don't mind, we can go through the slides and take the questions afterwards.
You think that would be best? Okay, that's fine. Very good. We'll do it that way. Okay. Thank you, Anu.
I would ask for Marcus to begin. And Marcus, you should have the ability to share your screen.
Sure. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for allowing us the honor of sharing the June fare and service changes that we are planning. My name is Marcus Markle, and I am on the communications team. And as Anu mentioned, I am joined by esteemed colleagues from across our departments, from bus to rail to planning to the Treasury Department and everything in between, so that we're here to answer any questions you might have about the imminent June fare and service changes that are happening at Metro. So for a brief overview, for those of you who are on the video screen, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Wonderful. Thank you so much. So we'll go over really briefly those big, brief overviews of fares and service changes, where they came from, what are our goals, our timeline, our tactics, and then some of the specifics. So first, a brief overview that my colleague Tamara in the Office of Management and Budget will go over here as our fares and service changes. Most were born out of the budget. Some are going to coincide and they're not related to the budget, but we'll go through some of those nuances in the slides to come. So I'm going to turn it over to Tamara.
Thank you, Marcus. Good evening, everyone. As Marcus said, I am Tamara Davis from the Office of Management and Budget. I want to give you just a brief overview, as my colleagues will go into further detail in some of the forthcoming slides. So Metro's approved FY 2024 budget totals $4.8 billion, of which $2.4 billion is operating expenses and $2.4 billion covers capital investments. The approved budget funds Metro's commitment to providing safe, reliable, and affordable service. The approved FY24 budget includes many initiatives critical to our customers and the region. It is reflective of our values of ensuring accessible and equitable service. The FY24 budget includes several investments in both fare optimization and service improvements, some of which will become effective during the month of June. The fare optimization changes will simplify and standardize fares for our customers. Customers will see a simpler Metrorail fare structure. Metro Access customers will have a cap of $4 per trip, and Metro Lift, Metro's new low-income fare program, will be implemented, making transit more affordable by applying a 50% discount to trips for customers enrolled in the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. Service changes include improved transit network with more frequency within the central portion of the system to serve fast growing areas, provide efficient and predictable transfers, and increase job accessibility. Service changes becoming effective by the end of June include more frequent service on four bus routes, the B2, the L12, 16M, and 11Y, and improved service frequencies on the yellow, blue, orange, silver lines with trains arriving every 8 to 12 minutes system-wide, benefiting customers across the network. As I stated earlier, my colleagues will now go into further detail on the within the forthcoming slides. Thank you.
And here, really briefly, we have a quick timeline here for folks as we look at the incoming programmatic timelines. Yesterday, you may have heard that we had a 8-minute daily service change to the yellow line. So that was Sunday on June 4th. And Tuesday, June 20th, as Tamara noted, is our Metro Lift launch. Our bus service changes are happening on Sunday, June 25th for the most part. There's one exception to that, the 11Y, which we'll get into. The Metro Access Cap, again, will take place on Sunday, June 25th. Metro Lift in-person enrollment centers will open on June 26th. Also on June 26th is that Monday, simplified rail fares will begin. Again, that's the first weekday that those you'll see take place, as well as the blue, orange, silver line, increasing to 12-minute daily service from open to 9:30 p.m., 15 minutes otherwise. You'll also happening at the same time is our summer shutdowns, and we can get into that a little later. I just wanted to share that in case you wanted to see what kind of activity we have this summer. So here for simplified Metro Rail fares, I'm gonna go ahead and toss this over to my colleague, Mac, who's in our planning department. Mac?
Thank you, Marcus, and good evening. My name is Mac Hughes-Cromwick. I am in the Office of Strategy and Policy. Our FY24 fare changes include simplified Metrorail fares on weekdays, a Metro Access fare cap of $4, and as previewed, the Metro Lift income qualifying reduced fare program. Beginning June 20th, Metro Lift will launch for online enrollment and in-person appointments. On Sunday, June 25th, Metro Access $4 cap will be implemented. And Monday, June 26th, simplified Metro Rail fares and Metro Lift and the Metro Lift in-person enrollment centers will begin. Next slide, please. For simplified rail fares, effective Monday, June 26th, 2023, we will be eliminating the weekday peak and off-peak pricing difference. Currently, peak fares are in place from 5 a.m. to 9:30 and 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Off-peak fares are from 9:30 to 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. We will be replacing those fare structures with a consolidated structure that lowers the base rail fare to $2 to match the bus fares. And the $6 maximum weekday fare will continue to exist throughout opening until 9:30 p.m. The $2 weekend and late night fares will continue in place. We will adjust the 7-day short trip pass to cover unlimited rail trips up to $4. Previously, it covered trips up to $3.85, which was the maximum off-peak fare. Since we are eliminating off-peak fares, we will adjust that to cover unlimited rail trips up to $4. Customers will see a lower fare on Metro Rail if they are currently riding during peak periods and travel less than 6.2 miles. We estimate that is 28% of all Metro Rail trips. customers are anticipated to see a higher fare if they are currently riding during off-peak periods and traveling a distance of more than 3.2 miles. That's estimated to be 13% of all Metrorail trips. Or if they are riding during a peak period, currently during peak periods between 6.4 and 15.5 miles, which is estimated to be 20% of all Metrorail trips. Next slide, please. I will turn this to Mr. Blake.
Good afternoon, everyone. Christian Blake here. As we've discussed, so I'll be very brief, as we've discussed many times here in the Accessibility Advisory Committee, beginning June 25th, the Metro Access fare will be a cap of $4, a $4 max fare. So no more $6.50 and above or above. So you've been well-versed in it. Your advocacy, I think, can be credited for some of this decision. And I don't think we need to belabor the meeting any further with that. But I'm also here to answer any questions that you may have about the $4 max fare for Metro Access beginning June 25th. And just so to save some questions, the IVR has been running with the messaging and other messaging has been being provided to customers as well. I'll turn it back to Marcus.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Blake. Now, actually, I'm going to turn it over to Tracy.
Thank you, Marcus. Hi, I'm Tracy Foster from the Office of the Treasurer, and it's a pleasure to be with you this evening. I want to talk to you a little bit about MetroLift, which is our income qualified fare program. And as my colleague Mac mentioned earlier, this is a new initiative that we're launching for the first time at Metro. I'm very excited to roll this out. We got a lot of press, positive press coming out as of today, even in a press release that was also drafted and went out earlier today. And what we're sharing with our customers is the good news for those recipients in the region, some 471,000 eligible Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program or SNAP recipients that are in the region in the District of Columbia, State of Maryland, or Commonwealth of Virginia will be eligible for this benefit. It will be comparable to senior and reduced fares by price, but distributed as a pass itself instead of on a separate card. So for example, if a customer already has a Smart Trip card, then what we will be doing is applying the 50% discount on Metrorail and Metrobus will be applied as a pass product. So that's really exciting. There's no different card. There's no self designating or these particular customers that qualify for this benefit will not be identified. They will look like a regular customer in the system using a Smart Trip card. So we're going to leverage the existing technology and apply this pass product accordingly. There'll be two ways to apply. One will be online. And we're finding, and when we did some peer review and benchmarking, that about 50% of customers did use the online tool and were able to actually apply for the benefit there. And then the in-person enrollment, which my team is going to host three sites, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. And so we're going to host three different sites where customers can enroll. We're using Eventbrite, which I know a lot of people are familiar with now, is the way that you go in. This is a free pass, but you'd actually be able to go in and schedule an appointment using the Eventbrite software, which we're highly recommending. So we can manage the crowds at our three locations, and it will give you a designated or set appointment to come out and do the enrollment, which will take about 15 minutes per person. The customers must enroll each year. So when a customer becomes eligible for the program, they will have to recertify the following year. Discount is not applicable to parking, Metro Access fares, or unlimited pass purchases. And it cannot be applied on top of other reduced fare programs. Really important to note that. Next slide, please. So customers can enroll in two ways. As I mentioned, they can enroll online or in person at a select Metro location. Customers will be requested to bring their contact information, Their SNAP, electronic benefit transfer card, or EBT card as it's commonly called. And they will bring their Smart Trip card with them and also have a government issued ID. Okay, so those are some of the requirements. So we'll basically, there's an interesting slide that's coming up next, and I believe it will demonstrate what the enrollment process is. So this is MetroLIV, how it works. The 50% discount will be applied to a physical or virtual Smart Trip card after enrolling, like passes that you can purchase online. You know, you can go to WMATA.com. You can purchase passes out there. You can do auto reloads and a number of features. This is how the product will be applied, very similar. The discount will be available for use within 48 hours for customers that enroll online. Why is that? One of our vehicles, which is buses are out all day. So we do what we call a probing step that happens at the end of the day, of the night, when the bus goes and returns to the garage. So with that, there can be some latency that can last for 48 hours. On rail, it's a lot faster and a customer could receive the benefit a little bit sooner. But the benefit of coming in person is that that customer will have that benefit applied to their Smart Trip card almost immediately. They will walk out the door and they'll be able to use their card in most cases almost immediately or within 4 hours. The technology that we're using in person is similar to what happens at CVS and Giant when a customer goes to add value to their Smart Trip card. Hence, that's where we are able to allow that benefit a lot sooner than we would if you were applying online and had to use the different system to onboard. So from left to right, the illustration at the bottom of the screen is simulating the in-person experience. The agents that you see on the illustration are actually staff that we're going to have available at three locations to enroll customers. So customers will enroll either online or they will come in person. Metro will digitally send the customers the pass to the customer's existing Smart Trip card. When the customer goes out in the system on Metro Bus or Metro Rail in the fare box, you'll see on the left, and you'll see our new turnstiles on the right at the rail stations that will activate the MetroLIV pass. So a customer could essentially come in and pay a full fare. When they come to one of our enrollment centers, they would leave and essentially go out and have the half fare privilege applied to their Smart Trip card. Real game changer. So here are the three locations. We have one location that's going to be at the Metro Center rail station. That's at 12th and F Streets at the mezzanine level. Some of you may be familiar with that location. We're going to repurpose that as a MetroLIV enrollment center. We're also going to be at the Metro office building at LaFont Plaza, located at 307th Street Southwest. We're going to be very close to where the Metro Access office is, but we're actually going to be on the corner of 7th and Virginia at a space that we're going to repurpose there. We will have signage there and we'll have plenty of people supporting and assisting customers to that location starting on June the 26th. The Metro office building at New Carrollton is our last and final location that's located in Maryland. So we have two DC locations. And we have one in Maryland here, and this is going to be on our first floor. We have a designated space here where we're going to have customers and receive them here. Our hours will be Monday through Thursday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. On Fridays, we're going to be open late. That's going to be our late night. We'll be there from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. A lot of the hours that we established for the program really mimic some of the other service agencies that we partner with to do this implementation. So we try to mimic the hours accordingly. So three locations, two in D.C., one in Maryland. And we have some other partnerships. We're talking to the state of Maryland is very interested in hosting us. And we're also talking to Virginia and some other community partners, community-based organizations, and also government agencies that want to partner to help implement this program and get the word out. So we're really excited about that. I believe there's one more slide, but no, that's not my slide. So at this time, I'll pause and take any questions. Yes.
Tracy, this is Phil Posner.
Hi, Phil.
I'm sure you're aware that the federal government in their debt limit bill, which has been signed by the president, has some effect on SNAP.
Yeah.
And whether you will be able to use a SNAP card that's no longer available if they're putting in work requirements and things like
that. Right. I saw that. I did see that legislation. So we think that our response to that is that I believe that this could induce additional interest for this program. And so we will be planning accordingly. I talked to a couple of colleagues about how we might even monitor the increased applications, which could be an indication to us that there's more interest or demand for these type of programs and reduced fare benefits in general. So I'm very aware of that legislation. We'll continue to monitor that and work with our government and community relations team so we can understand the impact to that demographic and this particular initiative overall.
Super, thank you.
And thank you. I read that in a Budget and Policy Center article about a week or two ago, and I understand that work requirement is in there. So I'll be keeping my eye on that.
This is Chair Sheehan. We do have three more members with their hands up in this order. Tino Calabria, followed by Denise Rush, followed by Philip Weintraub. So Tino, go ahead.
Yes, Tracy.
Hello.
Hi, Tracy. In your opening, mentioned an estimate of how many people would be eligible for Metro Lyft. This morning, only online, the Washington Post had a long article, and in it, it said that Metro estimates that nearly 377,000 people in the region qualify for the program. If I heard you correctly, it sounded like your estimate was bigger than 377,000.
Hi, Tracy. I can take this one.
Oh, thank you, Matt.
So we estimate that in the metro region, there are 471,000 people enrolled in SNAP. And per the program guidelines, if you are enrolled in SNAP, you are eligible for Metro Lyft. We also have an estimate that, you know, not all of those 471,000 people are Metro customers. So we provided an estimate that approximately 20% of that group in the region that's receiving SNAP benefits are actually likely to be Metro customers that don't currently receive any subsidies. And I think the Washington Post maybe mixed some of those numbers up. So we'll follow up with them to correct that. But the 471,000 number is our estimate of customers, of people in the Metro DC region enrolled in SNAP.
Well, maybe you can contact Justin George of the Washington Post, because the printed version will probably only come out tomorrow, and you might be able to catch it before it goes to press. Thanks a lot.
Yes, we just saw this about an hour ago. We're working on it. Thank you.
Thank you, this is Anil. Next is Denise Rush, followed by Philip Weintraub and Doris Ray. Ms. Rush, go ahead.
My name is Denise Rush. My only question is, why isn't there a local office or a central office in Virginia? Since it's D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, why isn't there where you can questions and enroll in Virginia.
We're coming, Ms. Rush. In fact, there's a new location where several DHS offices are consolidating to one building. So I'm keeping my eye on that location, and we'll be reaching out to some of our partners, our regional jurisdictional partners, to try to set up that meeting. But we're coming to Virginia, and we're happy to have Metro Center available to us, which is a central location and transfer point. But we do plan to have a location, even if, you know, we have several pop-up events, as we call them, where we would come there to libraries and additional places where we're already seeing large customer bases. So for the initial launch, we're in these in our own buildings. We repurposed the space that we had available to us, but we're certainly planning to branch out into the various jurisdictions. So stay tuned, but we'll definitely take that note, Ms. Rush, and we're hoping to have something, you know, out in Virginia real soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Rush. Philip, go ahead.
I was also thinking that this Metro Lift is a low income base, is income based for low income. I was just thinking like that to make it fair to make sure all people who are low income can take part of it. Like rather than just having SNAP as the qualification, maybe do some of these other like low income programs, like that, such as Section 8 housing or supplemental security income or Lifeline phone internet from the Universal Service Fund, so all people with low income can be qualified to do it, rather than, because otherwise, just they're all law of low income people, but they're not, might not all get SNAP, they might not all get these other subsidies I just mentioned.
I'm going to answer this twofold, but I'm going to defer to Mac, who's our policy SME on this initiative. And I know we have been looking at this across the board, but just for your own knowledge, we will be doing some partnerships with DCFS and DHS as well, even though those programs don't necessarily correlate to eligibility for SNAP. But we do believe that we want to partner with those agencies that may interact with this particular demographic. So we just want to make sure that we are out there and promoting this and making sure that we're striking the right type of partnership so as many people that are eligible for these services can take advantage of that. And then Mac, if you'd like to say something about, you know, this is the phase one or what we have planned for the future.
Yeah, just briefly. And I, of course, appreciate the comment. I think the decision made by the Metro Board of Directors was to really launch something that we thought we could implement quickly. So this is sort of, I would view it as the first stage of Metro Lift. And I think there will be future iterations that adjust the program qualifications based off of, you know, what we see in terms of enrollment. But in developing the eligibility basis for the initial launch, SNAP presented a lot of advantages, including there already being income qualification as part of enrolling in SNAP. So Metro, you know, does not have to handle personalized income documentation. And then the income eligibility for SNAP is consistent across the three jurisdictions, which provided another advantage. But again, the Metro Board can make a determination in the future based on enrollment and budget impacts whether or not to expand Metro Lift eligibility.
Okay, thank you, Phil. Doris, I hope you're able to better hear me, or my voice is coming out louder, I hope. But go ahead with your question, please. Doris Ray?
Those, if you are able to hear me, go ahead and ask a question, please. You're not on mute, Doris.
Your volume, I think, and mood may be a little too high, but we've got Doris. Can Doris go next? And then we'll go to Pat Sheehan to wrap us up.
Okay. Chair Sheehan, would you like to go?
Doris, yes. Go ahead. And if she gets unmuted, she can jump right in. That's a very large number of people that under SNAP that you will be giving benefits to. Do we have any idea how many of that 433,000 are currently WMATA customers? Are you also expecting to be sort of increasing the ridership because of this Lyft program?
Mac, did you want to take that one? I know we're estimating 20% of the customer base that we see out of the 471,000 are actually Metro riders. Did you want to expand?
Yes. Okay. Yes, Metro riders and customers that aren't already receiving a reduced fare either through the Senior Smart Trip card or the reduced fare ID card. Mm-hmm. And I believe to answer the second part of the question, yes, we anticipate additional ridership from mm-hmm. this program. I think it was 1.6 million additional trips that we anticipated for this fiscal year because of the Metro Lyft program.
So just to clarify then, I'm sorry, I misquoted. It was 471,000. Currently, out of that 471,000, you think how many are customers that use SNAP?
Our estimate is approximately 20% of that 471,000.
I'm not good at that. I'm on whatever that number is, okay? And then what do you expect to take really as a total out of that 471,000? 60%, 70%? Do you have numbers like that?
The estimate is approximately 20% of the 471,000 individuals enrolled in SNAP in the region are currently customers.
And what do you expect once you start having the reduced fare for all SNAP customers? What do you expect the increase to be?
Our budget projections estimated an increase of 1.6 million trips on Metro because of the Metro Lyft reduced fare program.
But you can't equate that into the 471,000. You're looking at it as trips. Okay. I was trying to see if the program itself would encourage more of the SNAP participants to take more trips. Okay, I guess we will wait and see.
I see where you're going now. Yes, mm-hmm. That'll be interesting to monitor.
Do you have right now? No, you don't have any way to really judge how many trips they're currently taking then, without SNAP benefits, right?
How many trips low-income customers currently take?
Mm-hmm. That are, what I'm trying to figure out is you have this program. You think you can measure what the total amount of trips are going to be. So is it an increase of 20%, 30%, 40%? What is it? How effective is this going to be if we want to measure the impact of this program? Do you have a way to do that?
Yes, we certainly will be monitoring that information.
Okay.
We have estimates on the percent of Metro bus and Metro rail trips that are currently taken by low-income customers.
Okay.
And we'll be monitoring to see what the impact of Metro Lyft is on that ridership.
Great. Well, this maybe this would be a point that we would be able to see. Is it Jordan Anu who gives us our quarterly statistics?
Yes.
Yeah. That might be a place where something like that could be measured and see if you meet the goal that you put out there. Very good. Thank you. Appreciate
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yes.
And this is Anu. I hope my volume is a little bit better now. Apologize that it got too high. But I just want to read this comment out loud that was placed in the chat by Marcus. Marcus added that he also adds that MetroLift joins a number of other reduced programs that are offered. And there is a link in the chat. I will be able to copy that link to all the AAC members after the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Anu.
Sure. Doris, are you able to hear me? And if you have your questions, please go ahead and ask. I'm not sure if Doris is having some technical issues, perhaps. Tino, I see your hand is up, but we can perhaps go ahead with the presentation and we can come back to you for any follow-up questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Anu. So as you heard from my esteemed colleagues across our departments discussing fares, now we'll turn to service changes, of which are comprised from our bus and rail operations. So I am inviting Nick and Heather. We're gonna go through some of these key dates here on the screen. There are three key dates. June 4th was yesterday with the Yellow Line offering 8-minute daily service. On Sunday, June 25th, bus service changes, the large majority are due to take place on that day. Monday, June 26th, blue, orange, silver riders will see a 12-minute daily service beginning from open till 9:30. We'll go into some of the details. We'll also have the 11Y also reinstated on Monday, June 26th. So I'll turn it over to my colleagues to discuss the details here. So over to Nick first from our bus planning department.
All right, good afternoon. Can everyone, am I coming through?
Yes, Nick, you are, thank you.
All right, great. Thank you for having me today. I recognize a lot of folks attending today and representing the AAC. I've been here in the past to speak to you about bus service changes in addition to other initiatives at Metro that the bus department has worked on. So as Marcus mentioned, the big date for bus is Sunday, June 25th with the follow on with the one route that operates weekdays only on Monday, June 26th. But starting June 25th, we're gonna have changes to 68 routes as part of our fiscal 2024 budget process, the service improvements. We're expanding the frequent service network on four routes. That's the 16M, the A12, the B2 and the L12, which is a new route. The 16M is in Virginia. The A12 is in Prince George's County. The B2, Bravo 2 is in the district. And the L12, Lima 12 is also in Prince George's County. And I'll go over that momentarily. These improvements are to increase ridership, expand access and advance equity across the region. And they respond to the feedback we hear from customers. Next slide, please. So route B2 joins the 12-minute frequent service network. Right now, this route is a 20-minute frequent service network service. What that means is the B2 will operate between Anacostia and Mount Rainier every 12 minutes or better, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. daily. Next slide. Route A12, this is an existing route in Prince George's County that's being restructured. It serves from Capitol Heights and Addison Road in the south, up to Landover and Capitol Plaza in the north. However, the route is being changed effective the 25th to extend to New Carrollton Station by way of Martin Luther King Jr. Highway. And while we're on this slide, I'll go over the L12. We're excited about this new route. This is a new route between Capitol Plaza, the site of the former Prince George's Hospital, Landover Station, and for the first time east of the Capitol Beltway, Metro Bus will serve the Woodmore Town Center area by way of Ruby Lockhart Boulevard and then to downtown Largo Station. Both Route A12, which is already part of the 20-minute frequent service network, and Route L12 will join the 20-minute frequent service network. So both the A12 and L12 will operate every 20 minutes between 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. and less frequent at other times. And in Virginia, routes 16G and 16H along Columbia Pike out of Pentagon City will be combined into one new route, 16M between National Landing, that's the Crystal City portion of National Landing, to the current 16H terminal at Skyline City. So it's a new one-seat transfer-free connection from Crystal City, Pentagon City, Columbia Pike, and then to Skyline by way of Jefferson Street. Route 16M will be part of Metro's 12-minute frequent service network service, meaning every day buses will operate every 12 minutes from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. and then less frequent at other times. Marcus mentioned this. I won't spend a lot of time here. We're Route 11Y, which was restructured as part of COVID and as part of our Yellow Line shutdown for the bridge and tunnel work. We'll have a new schedule that will start on Monday, June 26th. This is a weekday rush hour only route that operates to DC in the mornings and toward Mount Vernon and Fairfax County in the afternoons. And as has always been the case, the express fare will be charged. And then I think I have one more slide. And then the slide here lists all 68 routes, which will be part of the meeting record. I believe that's correct, Anu. So I'll spare everyone from me reading out all 68 routes. But what you see on, or what I'm describing now, these changes are just minor schedule adjustments to have bus travel times reflect traffic conditions and the like. So with that, I don't know if we want to go to rail and then do questions or I'm open to either. Heather, I'll turn it to you.
Thank you, Nick. I'm going to go over the rail service changes, which are a little bit more straightforward than my counterparts in bus, but because they have a lot more routes. And so starting this actually past Sunday, yesterday, the Yellow Line is now operating every 8 minutes from opening, starting from the start of service to the end of the day, 7 days a week. That is an improvement from May 7th when we were operating a 12-minute frequency on weekdays and weekdays late night and also on weekends. And then starting Monday, June 26th, the blue, orange, and silver lines will now operate every 12 minutes all day rather than just the peak period. Right now we're running a 12-minute peak and 15-minute off-peak service until 9:30 p.m. On June 26th, we will go to a flat 12-minute service 7 days a week on the blue, orange, and silver lines. The late night remains every 15 minutes.
Thanks so much, Heather. Sure. Related to the communications and outreach, we will be putting together a community toolkit, which will be found at WMATA.com/toolkit. It will contain two separate sections for fare and service changes in our all new Metro Lift program starting this coming Monday. We'll have sample email language with a call to action for customers. We'll also have sample social media language and sample graphics along with full Spanish translation. Beginning June 12th on Monday, we're gonna have in-station outreach at all Metro Rail stations during midday off-peak. We're having a number of bus ride-alongs as well to inform customers, especially those with impacted bus routes and rail service, especially at Hyattsville Crossing. We'll also have supplemental Metro Lift engagement where we're gonna drop off material at all 17 SNAP Center locations and additional community-based organizations each month, where we will also set up tables. We also plan to be at community and social services and DC public schools events and other school events, and along with additional bus and station outreach later this year as folks come back to school. Eventually, not yet right now, we're still working on some of the updates. We will have two websites available, WMATA.com/changes, which will contain all of the June changes for review and for customers to dig into, along with details and multi-language flyers, and then other additional elements such as a video, and our where you can find our community toolkit and our updated trip planner for folks who want to look at how their rail charge will be changed by the new simplified consolidated fare structure that Mac went over. And then on for MetroLift, we'll have WMATA.com/MetroLift, where there will be complete program info and frequently asked questions, all sorts of information about what documentation that Metro staff will need to have on hand for customers to successfully enroll in Lyft, along with, again, full Spanish translation, multi-language flyers, and a community toolkit. And then live the week of June 19th, as you recall, we're going to launch the program online. So there will be an online enrollment video, which will describe how to enroll. And the in-person appointment scheduler that Tracy spoke of on Eventbrite will also be live the week of June 19th, specifically June 20th, because June 19th is a federal holiday. That's when folks will be able to start enrolling. And then I'll turn it over to questions. I'm going to turn to you, Anu, for handling our questions.
Great. Thank you, Marcus. I do see three people, two members of the AAC with their hands up and more. So Tino,
running Anu. With- Anu. Yes. I just want to say thank you to this group of people who gave us such a complete overview of all the changes. I've done this for a long time, and I don't remember ever having such a consolidated, well-run, well-choreographed approach to all this information going forward. So nice job, everyone on this panel. You did a real good job. And Anu, I think you made the right decision to go through these slides so we got the entire picture, because this was very well choreographed. Thank you very much. Okay.
Okay, so shall we progress with the questions, Chair Sheehan?
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, let's go with questions. I think we're good.
Okay, thank you. So Tino, go ahead, and followed by Doris Ray, and then Phil Posner.
Much of the early discussion used the word metro, and it seemed as if we were talking about rail riders. Since the majority of the poor folks who are riders ride on buses, it's important to realize that that they will be maybe proportionally a larger share of the beneficiaries of the Metro Lyft program than those who use Metro Rail. Many of you realize that Metro Rail in its best times served suburban areas and the more affluent people who lived in the suburban areas. And Metro Bus always had predominantly minority and poor folks. So while we were talking about the benefits in general terms of, for Metro riders, we should realize that a lot of the benefits are for Metro bus riders. Do you have an estimate of how this shakes out in terms of numbers or proportions of Metro bus riders who will benefit from the Metro Lyft program?
Well, what we do know, and thank you for that comment, because we are cognizant of the ratio of bus to rail riders who either represent low income or minority communities. So on the bus side, we know we have a 50% low income or 83% minority ridership, to your point. And we know on the rail side, for Metro Rail, the numbers are much lower. And so we are cognizant of that when we are able to look at some of our ridership data to make some assessments. One of the benefits that will come out of this program is to measure that a little more pointedly. And so we will keep our eye on that
but we're certainly very aware of the demographic or the difference between the bus and rail ridership statistics as it relates to low-income communities. So we're sensitive to that. And with this program, we hope we'll be able to see the advantages and benefits of this, as well as what we've looked at in DC's low-income fare program. We learned some things there as well. So we'll continue to benchmark. We'll continue to come back to you with additional statistics and what we learned.
Yes, please do, because it's important to realize the proportion of minority and low-income people who benefit. One last question regarding the data. There will be so many changes, especially in terms of buses. Will there be new pamphlets that will be printed with hard copies that will go into the little baskets that are on the sides of the Metro Rail kiosk where the Metro managers are? Sometimes they'll have to answer the question, but it's often helpful if the pamphlets, the hard copy pamphlets, reflect the changes.
So I can take that one, if that's okay.
Sure.
So as part of the service change process, we'll be conducting outreach in addition to updating the timetables that you spoke to. I'm working with Marcus, and we'll have a complement of signs throughout the region at selected bus stops informing customers of these changes. We will have an advisory put out through Metro Alerts, in addition to staff on board buses discussing changes with customers, and in addition to news release and things like that. So this typical complement that, if you're familiar with when we've done these service changes in the past, we will have that variety of information available. I don't want to ruin the surprise, but there is a brochure that will also describe these changes that will be released at some point to the public, but the bus information is included in that.
And these will be available at the kiosks when people come up from the Metro Rail to transfer to Metro Bus.
They'll be I'll let my colleague Marcus, I think we do put those in the holders, or if we just have our outreach staff distributing them.
That is a resounding yes. We will have both our outreach staff on hand to help with distribution for brochures. We're planning to put them in the plastic bus holders. We have a plan about 150,000 brochures being distributed across 98 rail stations and our 1,500 buses in the fleet.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, thank you, Tino. Doris, go ahead. Doris, you have muted yourself now. Doris, if you're speaking, you're on mute. Okay, go ahead, please. We cannot hear you. Doris, you're not on mute and we cannot hear you. So we will come back to you. Janice, I do see your hand. We'll wrap up with the AAC members and then come back to you. Dr. Posner, followed by Darnis Henry. Dr. Posner, go ahead.
Yes, good evening. This is Phil Posner. Mr. Blake, two questions. We know the Metro Access fare peak is $4. How will the fare less than $4 be calculated? And then the other question is, will you be using the same policy for the shutdowns on the orange and silver lines that we had for the yellow line, which is you'll maintain that service area even though the stations are shut down? So first question was about the fare, and the second was maintaining the service area even though there are stations being shut down.
Right. So number two is actually easier to answer, because that's what we've been doing throughout the pandemic and throughout the other capital project shutdowns, temporary shutdowns for capital improvements. So yes, despite no service in those areas, Metro Access will continue to provide its full regular scheduled service as we've been doing since 2020. So there'll be no changes there. To the first question, all trips on Metro Access will be $4, except in those occasions in which a locally operated transit service has a fare that's less than $2. So in a case where the locally operated transit service has a fare of, let's say, $1, or in some cases, free of charge, then if that is the fastest fixed route equivalent trip for a customer's particular Metro Access trip, then that fare will be at a price less than $4.
Thank you, and congratulations if you're able to keep track of all those things that are being done in Alexandria and Arlington and DC and whatever. So we can laugh about it, but I'm sure you'll get it right because Ms. Rush will make sure of that.
Yes, and that's I hate to say this, you know, putting that on Ms. Allison Anderson. That's going to be her. She's been doing a great job of it so far, though. Trust me, it's been a challenge, but she coordinates with our colleagues in Treasury and in the region to ensure that we are aware of all the local fares, just in case one of those fares or one of those trips happens to be a faster fixed route equivalent trip than bus or rail for Metro.
I truly trust Allison, and I will check with her husband on a regular basis in Gainesville.
You beat me to it.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Posner. Darnese, go ahead.
My question is, well, I have a couple of comments. The follow-up, mine is a follow-up to Dr. Posner's in terms of the flyers and the brochures. I see that you said that you would, the Spanish would be completely, fully copied in the brochures. But what about the other languages and how many other languages will you have readily available for the brochures? And then I have a follow-up. I have another question. So should I ask that now?
Go ahead, Darnese.
My other question is, and we were talking about people that live in the poor parts of the city or people that have, how is the fare going to be, will the fare system change for people that live in usually wards 7, 8, and there's other wards where they have feeder buses because we don't have the rail is not in the neighborhoods. And so they actually take a bus to the subway station. So how is that going to impact the fares and the poor neighborhoods? What kind of information can you provide about that?
Thanks, Darnese. This is Marcus over in communications. I can say that we work very closely with our Office of Equal Opportunity Employment, who has a lot of research and on the demographics of the DC, Maryland, Virginia region. So they've conducted a lot of research on the languages that are in our communities across the region. And so we're gonna focus on 9 languages. We have Spanish, Amharic, Somali, French, Vietnamese, Korean, Chinese, both simplified and traditional. So we'll we're working very hard with our translation companies to make sure that we have information available in those top 9 languages that we've discovered through research. On the bus fare changes, I'll turn that over to my colleague Mac or maybe Nick.
So there's no, the bus fare is not changing. The only fare element that I spoke to was when the 11Y resumes service, that is an express fare route. But otherwise the bus fares, remain the same.
So, okay.
I'm sorry if I didn't understand the question.
Yeah, maybe I can explain it. In some areas, like for example, in Ward 8, people have to take the bus and pay the bus before they can go to, like, if they want to transfer to the blue line, red line, mm-hmm. orange line, or green line. They okay. have to take a bus from their neighborhood to those rail stations. So how will that impact the fare? And yeah, how will that impact the fare?
Well, there is no change, but at some point in the past, and excuse me, but I don't remember exactly when it happened, the board, part of the fare policy is that when there's a transfer from Metro bus to rail or rail to Metro bus, the $2 bus fare is included in full as part of the rail fare. So if you take a rail trip, let's say to Suitland Station, and you get on a P12 bus, mm-hmm. you use your Smart Trip card, your bus fare is free. It's a free transfer. Or vice versa, if you take the P12 to Suitland and board a Green Line train to get into the district, your rail fare will already include that $2 discount as part of that full transfer there. In the past, it was not the full bus fare. The transfer was less, so you didn't get that full credit. But that changed, and I apologize, it was like, I want to say 2 fiscal years ago, mm-hmm. if I'm thinking correctly. So the Metro bus service, and I believe the other providers are part of that. I know Fairfax County is, and others. As long as you're using your Smart Trip card, and when you tap from bus to rail or rail to bus, you get the full transfer discount, or the bus fare is that $2 bus fare is the transfer discount.
So because of this, do you anticipate more people riding the rails?
Well, this change happened, like I mentioned, 2 or 3 years ago, mm-hmm. and I don't know if Tracy's still on the line and
I may am.
Know. Yeah, when did that happen, Tracy? Was that 2 or 3 fiscal years ago?
I believe it was 2 years ago. We had updates in the tariff. These were promotional fares that we okay. actually went back to our board and they were adopted. And this is the $2 transfer discount that you're speaking of. You articulated that correctly, that if a customer is transferring from a bus, they will be up to $2. They will be credited on rail. So it's up to $2. So whatever that fare was, the originating bus route, they will be credited up for $2 and have that transfer reciprocity in place. So insofar as the impact on our ridership, I do not have those numbers in front of me, but this was in our recovery phase. And so we were just starting to welcome customers back to the system. And this was yet another initiative that we did to induce ridership. I do not have those numbers handy, but I'd be happy to come back to you with that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Donnie's. Kelly, and followed by Philip. Kelly, go ahead with your question.
Okay. Hi. Yes, this is Kelly Simino. As it relates to the new Metro Lift program, is there any measures in place that would enable a person without immigration documentation status that would be needed to secure like benefits such as SNAP, but notwithstanding that, still be able to avail themselves of Metro Lift?
Mac, if you want to, that's a good question, Ms. Kelly, and I appreciate you asking that. The eligibility that we're for the means testing is for SNAP right now. And so if a customer is eligible for SNAP, Mac, I don't know how that would impact their immigration status if they were granted that particular benefit. Certainly.
Not that I'm wondering how that would impact a person's immigration status, but if someone's does not have a documented immigration status in the US, but and therefore do not qualify for SNAP, would they be able to, but otherwise would meet the income qualifications, would they be provided access to Metro Lift program, or would they be denied that access because they do not they cannot apply for SNAP.
This is Tracy. If that is
something, I'm sorry. Is that you have to be a SNAP recipient in order to be in the program. No other
criteria,
qualifications, or criteria exist at this time. You have to be a SNAP participant, and that's the one and only basis at this time.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Kelly. Phil, go ahead.
I was wondering about all these, like this, there's like some of the frequency changes on the all the on the blue, yellow, and silver and orange line, but what, why not on the red line?
This is Heather. There are red line changes that will be implemented hopefully this fall. When we get more trains. So the short-term changes that we outlined are just those that are going into effect in June. We are, as part of the FY24 budget, the red line has a 5-minute peak service. And right now it's operating every 6 minutes. So we hope to do that. We are still trying to determine how many trains that we will have over the course of summer and fall. So we will be improving the red. It's just a matter of the timing, but the service changes we outlined are just for the very much, very much the short term coming up in this month. Good question.
Great. Thank you, Philip, with your question. Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
We have covered all the AAC members except Doris, because it seems like she had some technical issues. We do have a member of the public, Janice Samuel, with her hand up.
I think we can take that because our next thing on the agenda is going to be public comment period. So why don't we feed, we'll take her question for these individuals and then go into public comment period.
Great.
Janice. Okay. Good, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Sheehan. Janice, go ahead with your question.
Thank you. My question is regarding the A12 bus route that will be servicing the Woodmore Town Center. I wanted to know if this is going to be, the service will be provided 7 days a week or Monday through Friday, and when will that service begin?
Sure. This is Nick Profili from Bus Planning. Route A12 is actually not the one serving Woodmore Town Center.
I'm sorry.
It'll be Route L12. L is in Lima 12.
Thank you. Okay.
Yep, you're welcome. And that route will operate. I'll go into a little bit more detail. Maybe Marcus can put the map back up. It's Capitol Plaza to the site of the former Prince George's Hospital, where people can transfer between several other routes. It then serves Landover Station on the Orange Line. It then crosses along the Landover Road corridor over the Beltway, and that's when, by way of Lockhart Boulevard, it will serve Woodmore Town Center, and then serve downtown Largo Station. And this route will operate every 20 minutes or better, between 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. every day of the week.
Okay, and that'll begin when?
June 25th. Okay. And there will be service before 7 a.m. and after 9 p.m., but it'll be less frequent. But yeah, it's it joins our 20-minute frequent service network.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Hope to see you on board.
All right. Thank you, Janice. Actually, we do have two more members with their hands up, Philippa and then Denise Rush. So Philippa, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Kind of making the comment as a member of the community. I just wanted to say that coming from a place, Kansas City, Missouri, that was sort of a transportation desert in terms of public transportation desert, have a cousin in Colorado Springs, which is a major city, who they can't even get a job because the buses stop running at 5 p.m., et cetera. And I'm not as well versed in the world-class systems like Pat and Tino and Phil and some of the others, but I just want to say I really appreciate Metro. I really appreciate what you guys are doing. for the public. And, you know, forgive the hope the rest of the committee forgives me if I seem to be brown nosing, but I'm not. I'm just stating the way I feel because I'm talking to people, probably more people toward the West part of the country. But I think we have a really good system here. I mean, they're very responsive. You know, it takes them years sometimes to get around to what we want, but sometimes they do get there. So I just wanted to thank everyone at WMATA. I really appreciate you guys and what you're doing. That's it.
Thank you, Philippa. Ms. Rush, go ahead.
This is Denise Rush. So with the extension of the L-12 going to the Woodmore Town Center and going 7 days a week, are you telling me that people who couldn't go to that town center to shop, especially on Saturdays and Sundays, now you can make a Metro Access trip there?
Metro Bus will serve a stop on Lockhart Boulevard at Woodmore Town Center. So that the eligibility that comes with that will, that route starts on Sunday, June 25th.
So, Mr. Blake, are you saying that now we can make a Metro Access trip to eat there at that town center?
Yes, within 3/4 of a mile of fixed rail service, you know, Metro Access will be there. So this new service, this is a great thing. And I know you've been saying all the new service has been elsewhere, and I think they've heard you. So at least on this one, there will be new service, and Metro Access will provide comparable paratransit service as well.
Well, I'm going to make a trip to Copper Canyon so I can see if I can eat there on a Saturday or Sunday.
You're going to make a trip where? To where?
Copper Canyon.
Oh, yeah, good Copper restaurant.
I'm going to meet you there.
Yeah, and so because
we would have parties there, and half of Metro Access blind people could go, and the other half couldn't. So I'm going to tell them, let's go.
Yeah. Amen. See if you can get Mr. Blake's credit card. He might pick up the tab. So if I could just jump in here for a second. This is Pat Sheehan. What was just discussed, I think, is important because, and Altino, I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot because I was reading one of your posts, and I think you indicated by one of your posts that because of the grandfathering that we had in effect way back when, that even if new service came into a spot, that the only people who could go to that particular spot were those that had been grandfathered, let's say like Denise. But from what Mr. Blake just said, and my understanding also, anytime that the service is expanded, whether it's like we're having in this particular case, or whether it's through Better Bus Network, that will incorporate anybody who is in the Metro Access universe, whether you're grandfathered or not. That is correct. Thank you, sir. I'm glad we agree on that one. Tino, does that make sense?
Well, yes. I was hoping that no one would be left out, as seemed the case, give this grandfather pause.
Right.
Be handling this question in more length in the Access subcommittee meeting so we can get into the details of that.
Right. But the reason I bring it up here, Tino, and certainly not to pick on you and your logic behind it, but I was thinking that if you were thinking this way, then there might be other people thinking this way. And so I just wanted to understand and be clear that if we can extend the bus system out to a particular place, to a particular spot, as they want to do with the Better Bus Network, you're automatically going to increase the area that Metro Access will cover, and I think that's a good thing. Now, I'll table the rest of
Ontario.
Hang on a second. I said I'll table the rest.
Alexa, turn on sitting room lamps.
What? I will table the rest of my remarks because I'm sure we can bring up other points, of course, in the bus rail subcommittee. So we'll take that. But thank you, Tino and Denise, for letting me jump in here.
Well, actually, Metro Access Subcommittee would be handling
grandfather. Yep, you're right. You're Metro right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, Vanessa, I see your hand up. So go ahead and ask.
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And after that, we will go into public comments. So if any members of the public have any questions or comments, we will be taking your comments and questions right after Vanessa's question.
Okay, thank you. This is Vanessa. In the same vein that we're in right now, I wanted to ask, is the bus system extended to Crane Highway? Because I have people that are out there that trying to see if they can get the weekend service and they are not grandfathered in. And the area that you're speaking about, you mentioned Copper Canyon. How far is that bus? What else does that bus line service? What other area?
Sure. This is Nick Profili again from Bus Planning. The L12 is the route that the new route I was speaking of, and it will not serve Crane Highway. The farthest it will go is it will cross over the Beltway on Landover Road on the east side of the Beltway to Lockhart Boulevard to serve the Woodmore Town Center, which is the shopping plaza with the Copper Canyon Grill, as we've discussed, but it also has a Hampton Inn, a Wegmans, a Best Buy, and a Costco, just to name a few. The bus will then travel by way of Lotsford Road. So the farthest east it will go is Lotsford Road from Lockhart Boulevard.
Adam Lasky had
downtown Largo Station.
Okay, so you're saying if I am not grandfathered in, but I want to go to those places, I can go and come from those places only.
Okay,
so just before we get too far afield here, because this isn't a grandfathering discussion, and we'll talk about it more at the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting. But here's the key. They are expanding we're expanding bus service.
Mm-hmm.
Where there is an expansion of bus service, there is no grandfathering discussion. You don't have to worry about grandfathering. We're expanding bus service. So anywhere within 3/4 of a mile of that new bus service, any Metro Access customer.
Adam Lasky.
Okay.
So anytime, just like when we expanded the rail system with the Silver Line phases 1 and 2, anybody, grandfather or not, can travel to all the way to the last stop on the Silver Line. Has nothing to do with grandfathering. That's an expansion of the service area, and therefore Metro Access is providing service within 3/4 of a mile to those locations.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Vanessa. Chair Sheehan, this is Anu.
I agree.
Okay.
I'd like to thank this panel for just a wonderful job. Very thorough and a lot of good questions from everybody. Thank you. And let's go to public comment period.
Great, thank you. Mm-hmm. I see two hands up for public comments. I see Janice Samuel and Ansel Torres. So Janice, go ahead. And when you start speaking, your 3 minutes will begin.
Thank you, Anu. Another comment regarding the expansion. So those who live 3/4 of a mile from the new bus stop at the Woodmore Town Center, will that automatically be calculated when individuals call in to request paratransit service?
Yes. The system will be updated to take into account the new service area and 3/4 of a mile around that service area. So if you live there, you can be picked up from there. If you're traveling there, you can travel to a home, a business, or other location.
Right, right. Understood. Yeah, my question was just, there's nothing the individual has to do. It's going to be an automatic system update.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Yes,
ma'am. And going down.
Okay, thank you. Ansel Torres, go ahead.
Yes, this is Ansel Torres. I'd like to revisit a question that I brought up earlier on this year, having to do with the legitimacy of the current chair. This specifically has to do with Pat Sheehan, given that he has exceeded his time to serve as chair and has been on the committee for over 20, 25 years. When the bylaws say you're not allowed to do either. I was told by Mr. Sheehan that I would be given some sort of explanation of why this is the case and how why is it legitimate, but I haven't received any response after waiting months for that response. The next question I have has to do with it seems to be a common trend now when you call where's my ride or call reservation and you ask to be passed to supervisors, you're being transferred to an answering service or you're just being switched off to customer service to file a complaint. I don't think that's acceptable. And when I have an issue that I need to have dealt with urgently, talking to a recording is not going to do anything for me other than frustrate the heck out of me. The third question I have has to do with in areas where there are zero fares on the equivalent route. I need to understand why it is I am paying $2 when the fare for disabled people is zero. Two times zero is still zero. It's not two. I'd like to get an explanation for those. Thank you.
Okay, three good points. And let's start with the second one in terms of performance of the call center. I have reported your call from the weekend. Or last week, it wasn't the weekend, but you and I talked about it over the weekend. And we're going to get back to you. We're going to be listening to the individuals you interacted with and do proper follow-up. But I am going to follow up with you on that, or someone from the OCC care team will be following up with you on that that call. The first question was about the AAC tenure. And again, we're looking into it now. I've given you the answer that I've always been under the impression that we've worked with here. And that is, whenever there's a new bylaw, the clock, if you will, of the membership starts back. So, and I know you disagree with that opinion, and I'm not saying that's going to be the final opinion. That's always been what I've operated under, and I know since Patrick is quote unquote the target here, although he certainly isn't the only one with a good positive tenure on this committee, but I know Dr. Phil has his own knowledge and experience in terms of how the bylaws have been interpreted over time and the precedent that has been set. So if he wants to chime in, that would be appreciated. But that's where we are right now, is that with the new bylaws, the clock changes.
Hang on, Mr. Blake. Wait a minute. Ansel, let me answer this since you asked the question concerning me.
Yes, sir.
Back in, I believe it was 2015, the memorandum of understanding that the AAC had and who we reported to changed. and we started reporting to the board of directors. So the bylaws were changed back at that time. And so the tenure for myself as chair between the time of, let's say, 2008 and 2015 was changed because the people that we reported to and the bylaws basically thoroughly changed, and that MOU that needed to be signed by the director of the ADAP program and the chair was no longer in effect. So there was a new set of bylaws and a new directive that we agreed to work with the board of directors. And that is what we're operating under right now. I would say that the board of directors has the absolute authority to not approve me on the committee or even approve me as chair of the committee. And any time that they feel that the chair is not doing a good job, I serve at the pleasure of the board of directors. I can certainly get you dates and times as to back up the information that I have. I find it interesting that you're so thoroughly interested in the workings of the bylaws and all of that on this committee. I think that we have far more work to do with a budget deficit coming up of close to $700,000 this year, that we need to be working together as a team with advocates like yourself on the outside and advocates like ourselves on the committee to try to keep Metro Access, the service area, the Better Bus Network, and all of those programs moving forward. I think that would be a much more effective use of my time, the committee's time, and your time, but that's up to you. But yeah, I will get you a response based on what happened in the past with times and dates and all of that.
Okay, I basically all I'm looking for is documentation that says that this is legitimate. There's nothing in the bylaws that says that this starts over or anything like that, because basically but what I'm hearing here is, you know, about who is doing a good job or not doing a good job. My issue is not really about who is doing a good job or who isn't doing. I'm not here to make a judgment on Pat Sheehan. I am simply questioning the legitimacy as it is spelled out in the bylaws, because these bylaws, I presume, are not to be adhered to, you know, on a whim and fancy. Otherwise, this is a kangaroo operation. If the bylaws are not to be adhered to, then why have them? I mean, it's just a pretense.
We need to get past the pretense of that.
You've made that clear. So let me just answer your third question. And again, Patrick will follow up on his tenure and we'll go from there. The third question, you were asking places that have or jurisdictions that have zero fare for people with disabilities. Well, those are not their fixed route fares. Those are promotional fares. If the fare for a jurisdiction's locally operated transit service is $1 for all customers, that happens to be a discount of $0 for people with disabilities, the fare that's calculated would be on the $1 for Metro Access. If the fare is zero for everybody, then the fare that would be calculated for Metro Access would be zero. So twice a $1, if that happened to be the fastest fixed route equivalent fare, would be $2. Twice zero, if that happened to be the fastest fixed route equivalent fare, would be zero.
Regarding this definition of a fare as regarding this definition of a fare as a promo, nowhere in this in the submission of these fares does it say it's a promo. That's just made up stuff. And if you can tell me, if you can show me where this is called a promo,
okay.
I would accept
Mr. Blake.
It is not a promo.
Let me explain, Mr. Torres. Here's why. Because again, they may not use that terminology. Yeah, that's my terminology. A person who has not signed up or does not present some identification or other means that generates a discount to the fare, they would pay the regular fare, and the Metro Access fare is calculated based on the regular fare that anyone who's boarding a bus, a locally transit operated service, would pay without any other form of discount, promotion, or whatever terminology would be used. The fare that a person pays, just generally boarding the vehicle, that's the fare that Metro Access fare is calculated on.
Anu?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mr. Torres has had his 3 minutes. Let's move on.
Sure.
I'm allowed to ask follow-up questions.
Let's move on.
Everybody gets to ask follow-up questions.
Anu.
So please stop it. Thank you.
Other members, if we have any remaining time, we can come back to you. Thank you. Amanda Hellman, go ahead. Amanda Hellman, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. I don't know if this is appropriate time or not, but I did have an issue with one of my Metro Access rides last week, and I reported it, and I guess based on the issue, I was told that it's kind of like an Uber issue. But I just wanted to clarify what should be done. I also contacted Uber about the issue. In short, what happened is that the driver, after accepting my ride, decided that because it was too far for him to go, or more specifically, it was from Germantown to Washington, D.C., He told me he was not driving to Washington, D.C., and he had a lot of reasons why, and then basically just put me out the car. And so I had to call back to Metro Access to, I guess, reschedule a ride so that I can get home. So I understand that was probably, you know, the Uber driver and probably between him and his manager or whatever. But I was just wondering, so how would Metro Access address that? Or is there anything that you all can do about that?
There is nothing we can do about that. Mm-hmm. An Uber driver, if you were to say the Uber driver, and we just have to just talk frank as adults. If the Uber driver said he didn't want to take you because of your race, the Uber driver said he didn't want to take you because of your disability, your gender, or some other discriminating factor, we would absolutely take action. An Uber driver, though, as you said, doesn't want to leave that area of Germantown and go into DC and have a long trip back. That is part of the Uber experience. As a regular customer whose trips are on Uber are not subsidized by Metro, you know, using this example, I've had experiences leaving the Metro office at New Carrollton on my own personal Uber account. They see a nice fare. Then when they get there, they see I'm heading to Baltimore, Maryland. They'll cancel the trip. That's just a factor that we have to take into consideration. And and you handled it right. You called Metro and we quickly basically rescheduled the trip for you. Hopefully it was quickly, but that's what we do. And some of us are watching these. We get email notifications. You know, I'm not watching it 24/7, but you know, if I happen to be somewhere and I see that cancellation come across, On my cell phone, I could quickly click on it, but as you did, you called the call center and hopefully they provided you kind, courteous service mm-hmm. and quickly rescheduled it. But the idea that we can mandate or force independent contractors to take a customer anywhere is just not part of the power we have over Uber. We have that over our drivers, because if a driver, if a Metro Access driver pulls that, then he or she will be suspended, obviously. But we don't have that power over companies we do not have control over.
Right. All right. I understand it. So, you know, but I did, you know, call Uber, as I mentioned, and I did put it on record with you all what happened, and I was rescheduled, and I did get home safely with no problem.
Glad to hear that. And we do encourage customers to contact the company directly. I see the complaints, if you will, when I hear, you know, I hear this a lot, and it's been picking up a little bit because the demand, not just from Metro Access customers, and we're sending them a lot of trips, but the demand from people in general has, as we've come as a nation, as this region is coming out of the pandemic, the demand is increasing faster than the supply of Uber drivers. So there's been more cancellations and challenges. That's probably going to mean a fare increase, but I know Uber is trying to keep their fares low. There's that balance mm-hmm. they're trying to play. But we're here to support our customers. If you opt in, we're always there, either as a backup with the Metro Access vehicle, or again, we would reschedule your Uber trip.
Right, right. But I do see it as a bit of discrimination, because he was emphatic that he was not going to Washington, D.C. So anyway, that's fine. But that was all after I got in the car. I was all buckled up and ready to go. And then as soon as he pushed whatever button he pushed, then my address came up, and then suddenly all bets were off.
Yeah. I don't know if they started it. I don't know if they've started in the DC market yet. I do believe in New York what Uber is doing now, although as you point out, that could be a double-edged sword. They're starting to let drivers see where they're taking the passenger. But the double-edged sword, I'm just going to call out, let's say Baltimore. They see Baltimore. I don't want to go to Baltimore. All that stuff is happening. And we can pick out parts of our service area where that mentality among some drivers may arise as well. So it helps reduce the number of cancellations, but it may have a bad impact that some customers may wait longer for pickup. So we have to monitor that.
I understand. I do. I mean, I understood his position, but it unfortunately inconvenienced me, and I viewed it as discrimination and poor customer service. But I got home safely. That's the important thing. Thank you.
Chair Sheehan, it is 7:18 and we do have several hands up at this point.
7:18 and we have what, Anu?
We have four AAC members with their hands up, and we also have the reports due.
Let's see. Well, I would like to get to the reports. Why don't we get to the reports, and then we'll see if we have time for those four AAC members who will have a minute each. Let's see if we can do the reports quickly.
So, Tino, beginning with you to give a quick bus and rail subcommittee report, followed by Paul Semelford to give a quick Metro Access subcommittee report. Tino, go ahead.
The May 8th bus rail subcommittee met and Lynn Bowersox, David Souter, who are key to the Open Gangways project, attended and answered questions. Having looked it over, I would ask that Sandy and Tom Mangrum look at the draft, and if you have any corrections or remembrances that need more clarification, please do that, because I know that Sandy pointed out certain deficiencies, And Tom Mangrum talked about poles that may be in the way. And there was also a cross discussion about when the open gangways train is crowded, would Tom Mangrum or Denise Rush be able to maneuver around that? Let's see. We also had the discussion of courtesy stops. Jewel Bell came and talked about what can be done if a rider on the bus feels it's necessary to get off the bus prior to the regular stop. Jewel Bell mentioned that. Is the chief person involved with the Better Bus network redesign? He explained where things are at this point. So please, Sandy, and is Tom Mangrum here? I didn't see.
He's not on this meeting today.
Okay, well, I'll contact him. Okay. But anyway, that's what we covered. And before we bring it to a vote, maybe some clarification could be provided if felt necessary by Sandy or Tom Mangrum.
This is Sandy. Are you talking about the minutes from the meeting to go over those? Okay, yeah. I will.
Yeah, please. And now, Paul.
All right, thank you. I'm going to make this short and brief, everyone. Good evening. This is Paul Somerford, Metro's Access Subcommittee Chair. So last month, we had a very vibrant discussion. There were a lot of questions from our wonderful friends from the Eligibility Office. Mr. Antoine Johnson gave the presentation of some of the things that they always normally do and some of their expanded roles in the Eligibility Office and took, and between him and Mr. Blake responded to customer questions and or concerns as it relates to Metro Access eligibility. We Ms. Anderson gave a brief update on the web booking site and some of the issues that it technical issues that some of us have experienced. And she said that a fix is in the ways of being tested. And we'll be hearing back from her next month about an update about that. It looks like it's positively going. We had some discussion about the abilities ride programs, in particular that the promotional trips that we've been getting right now will not be lasting forever. At some point, there will be some type of fare, just to make that clear. And of course, that will be announced at, you know, whatever point. But these are just promotional fares that have been, you know, provided to get people to use abilities ride. Minivan updates, there will be more of that. More of that at the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting. The flat fare, everyone should, anyone who has dialed in or logged in into their Metro Access web booking account should have seen or heard when they dial in the main Metro Access number at some point talk about the flat fare, and it goes in more detail after going through a certain prompt. So at the beginning of June 25th, there will be the flat fare of a cap up to $4 will be in effect. And more information you can get on the IVR when you dial in. The Metro Access pickup window change that will take place July 1st. Again, there'll be updates much later as it gets closer towards the end of the month. This month in June, it will be communicated to customers via the IVR and other formats. Now, there is on the way, on the horizon, the Metro Access Where's My Ride app. Mr. Blake has promised, so now it's in a sort of beta desktop, beta phases of being tested with select customers. I will say it does look very promising, but things do need to be tweaking, does need tweaks, and we will talk about that at the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting. Finally, I already submitted the agenda, and I heard everyone loud and clear about talking about care and fathering, so that discussion will be included next month's meeting as part of the agenda. Any other questions? That is my report.
Thank you, Paul. The grandfathering will be covered in July or?
No, in June. It's already in the agenda.
This month's yes. agenda. Okay, very yes. good. Thank you. I've got four other people I'd like to hear from. Right. So if no other questions for Paul, thank you.
And there's thank an you, updated Paul. Agenda that I just sent out to everybody in email.
Beautiful.
And management.
I love thank your you. Updated agendas. Thank you, Paul. Right. Anu, each person gets 1 minute.
Okay. Starting with Denise Rush, followed by Darnies, Kelly, Vanessa Coles. And we have
1 minute. I don't know, but it is now June and July. Of course, August is a closed month. We don't attend. We need to talk about the get a committee together to update the bylaws.
Okay.
We need to know or promote or know who are applying for the AAC committee, because time is passing. We don't have much time. 2 months.
Right.
Okay, that's all, because I don't have enough time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Rush. Darnies, go ahead.
Okay, my question is, I have two things, but I have a shoulder waiver to ride Metro Access. And a couple of the drivers told me that I need to bring the paper with me. Is this a new procedure that you have to bring your medical information with you when you ride Metro Access? Because I never heard of that. And the second thing.
Not your medical information, but I think Ms. Bush, that we've always asked you to carry the waiver. The waiver comes from us. It's a document from Metro, not your personal medical information. So I thought we did always ask customers to have that piece of paper with them so you could show the operator, so that the operator doesn't feel that just anybody could get on the vehicle and say, I have a waiver for the seatbelt.
No, we haven't been. I've never had to carry mine. It's already attached to my ID number.
Yeah, it's usually when the driver looks at you, when they pick you up, your information by your address, they usually have with specialties or something pertaining to you. I thought that's where the waiver
might. This is Paul Summer for the Metro Access Subcommittee Chair. What my understanding from eligibility was that when a person is approved for the waiver, it is noted in the customer's information, if I'm correct, Ms. Anderson, when the driver sees that. So there should be no question about that.
Okay. And your second question, Denise?
My second question is... basically, well, it's not really a question. It's when Metro Access is supposed to come within the half hour period now, and they don't come, and you call them, and they say, well, it's going to be another 15, 20 minutes. That means in addition to that half hour already. And then when you ask to speak to a supervisor or whatever, you get cut off. And is there any repercussion besides just complaining all the time about this? Because I missed a very important medical appointment that I had on June 1st. And that's just a statement. You don't need to answer it now. So you can go to the next person.
Okay, next person.
Thank you. Kelly, go ahead.
Alert, audio now unmuted.
Kelly Simona, go ahead. Okay,
let's go to our next person.
Vanessa.
Okay, this is Vanessa. In the same vein of the last consumer regarding Uber, Mr. Blake, could you explain to everyone so that the situation that happened to me doesn't happen to others, because I would have had to get out of that Uber's vehicle. So we need to make sure that we verify our destination, because whatever they have in there, whether it's a typo or not, they're going to take us there and expect for us to discharge their vehicles. And we will have to wait wherever we are for another vehicle. So I just wanted to stress that.
Right, yeah. So, and this is for any customer when you're getting in an Uber or a taxi. Frankly, even when you're getting in Metro Access, you should ask, what address are you transporting me to? There was a case with you, Ms. Coles, and I have, was not my employee, but I did have a good discussion with them, and I'm creating a document for that, for that employee and others. But in this case, there are two different locations for Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind, one in Montgomery County and one, the primary one, downtown DC. They entered Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind, but had the wrong address. But again, what we want to do, and that should have happened, and I've told them how to avoid that situation. But whenever you're getting in a vehicle and somebody's taking you someplace, my advice, be it Metro Access, cab, or an Uber, always verify your address before moving on. If you find the address is incorrect, Metro Access will send you another vehicle or have the information updated.
So we are at 7:30. Anu, do you want to close out with your statement?
Sure, it's 7:31. If any members of the AAC or members of the public have any additional comments, please feel free to email those to me, and we will make sure that your comments or questions get answered or addressed. If anyone would like to make public comments before or after the meeting, can email us at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
Good. All right. We're past time. I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
For a good meeting.
Thank you.